Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address. Disclaimer time. This is where I tell everyone to lighten up. It's just a podcast. Trading is like that roller coaster at the amusement park. Thrilling, unpredictable, and potentially stomach churning. What works for one person might leave another clutching their hat in the wind. Our hosts and guests, they're awesome, knowledgeable, full of insights, but we're not financial advisors. So don't rush to make any investment decisions based solely on our banter. Always consult with a professional or do your own research. Plus, let's face it, we like to have fun, laugh, enjoy the trading ride together. It's all in the name of good podcasting fun. So remember, take it easy, don't bet the farm, and keep your seatbelts on at all times. Thank you for listening. All right. Hello, everybody. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the China Shop, home of the Band of Traders podcast, and sometimes referred to as the Fistful of Dollars show. I'm your host, Kyle, and joining me tonight, we've got Fonta Trading's Baba Yaga, as is tradition. And now that hockey season is finally wrapping up, we've got Flurry back with us. How you boys doing today?
Great.
Wonderful. Is it Vonta or is it Vanta? Am I saying it wrong always?
It depends on who says it. If I say it, it's Vonta. If he says it, it's Vanta. We've just agreed to go our separate ways.
One team, Vanta.
On the docket tonight, we've got recovering from outsized losses, followed by average rotations and why they're important. After that, we'll take a look at our past week at the good, bad, and ugly before wrapping up with some new bold predictions. And since we didn't make any predictions last week, we can just go straight into show news and get all the plugs out of the way. So, Baba, you want to tell us what's cooking at Vanta?
At Vanta. What is cooking? Well, we are still running our promotion for a tool set that we use, or some of us use parts of. Highly recommend, especially if you like my Delta bars and some of the stuff like that that I use. So check that out. It's in the Discord, so you have to go there to find it. But it's a good discount. And then, yeah, other than that, just hanging out, man. Doing well.
Love to hear it, man. Flurry, what do you got going on, man? It's been a little bit since we had you here.
Yeah, hockey season is abound, man. And we still have the young junior, or I guess he's the third, I'm a junior. He made states. So we had district and then regional and now state. So one more week of hockey, but then it's it. And they took a week off between. But yeah, it's been good to keep up with you guys, but it's also great to join you guys again. So,
did your son make it past the trade deadline unscathed?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes.
All right. Let's see. For the show, we've got a new humanity episode with Cleo special coming out next week. This time, she's sitting down with our good friend Purdue, and also we've somehow managed to finally book Credelli, so that one should be getting recorded in April another one of those humanity specials. Yeah. Really stoked about that. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at FinancialInept1. You can join the Discord that Baba mentioned there to get updates whenever these shows go out. Send in suggestions for future topics or guests or any of that good stuff. Visit Band of Traders Podcast, browse the guest directory, check out deals and discounts and all that jazz. All right, since there's no new predictions to cover other than Banks' no rate cuts till June, we'll just move on to today's first topic. And since the type of week that we've had with the crazy move, especially today, I think this might be a little bit more topical than I expected. But I kind of want to talk about more about the side of what to do when the fail safes you put in to stop yourself from doing silly things like fail. We've talked a lot about like how to prevent those outsized losses, but what do you actually do when you experience one? How do you recover that? I'm curious to hear like kind of your guys' thoughts on your process.
Well, I mean, I would say that the fail safes and the there's a lot of stuff you can do beforehand to keep that at a minimum. You would want that to be a small representation of your sample size. So, for instance, like, I would say in the time that we've been trading together, Kyle, there's been 2 days where I would say my loss was like outsized, like more than just like a red day. That's like, oh man, damn, you know,
right.
There's been two, one of them was this week actually. And then one of them was forever ago on a Friday. So they've both come on Fridays. So that would be just, and typically over the course of my trading, I know the days that the representation of outsized loss days come in a distribution on certain days that of the week for whatever reason for me. So it's Fridays. Fridays used to be Mondays, but Mondays, not such a thing anymore. I think partly because of some of the stats work that we've done. Honestly, I have a pretty great expectation Mondays. Fridays seem to be the wild card, right?
Yeah, the Wild West.
They are where the buffaloes roam, if you will. So just headlong into the storm. That being said, I don't think that you can 100% never have an outsized losing day. Like, I don't think, I mean, maybe somehow someone somewhere is so disciplined and so methodical and so systematic that they never experience that. But
sometimes it could even be things outside of your control too. I mean, like say like Top Step X had some issues today. Say you're in like max size and the platform locks up and now suddenly you can't close anything or execute any stops. Like that's beyond your control.
Yeah. Or a technical mistake on your part. I mean, there's been times where, you know, you enter way more, I've entered way more size than I anticipated. You double tap a hotkey or triple tap it, you know.
Or you're trading minis instead of micros.
Yeah. So, I would just say for everyone, you know, the anticipation of perfection is probably a long reach because of the varied ways that you can find yourself on the business end of a pretty outsized day. So that would be like my first point is just like, they should be a very small sample size of your experience, but they're going to come even with like variants of what your strategy or approach produces. You're just going to have a day where you do everything the same way as you did the day before and you take it, you know, you have a losing day, you know, as far as like process, like, and Flary and I have talked about this offline. Like we were talking, it wasn't that long ago. I said, man, something about the day or whatever. And he was like, yeah, it's a bad day to be a process trader. You know, like when your process shows this is what I should do, then you do it and you get smacked. And like some days are just like that, you know, and that's going to be the distribution of those L's. If you were to pull up, you know, a distribution of those of probabilities of how, you know, how often the losses can stack up in a profile that gives a certain win rate, you're still run the chance of having a few crappers in a row.
Well, that's a good point. I mean, the longer you trade, the more likely you are to experience a significant string of losing trades in a row.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like the bigger the sample size.
Inevitability. Yeah.
Yeah. The law of large numbers just kind of kicks in on the other side eventually. But I think the key thing that you said there, Baba, is like that you're aware of it from a journaling perspective or from a stats perspective. And, you know, yeah, should we not have outsized days? And is it really a pursuit of perfection to not have outside days? Like, you could argue that it's not, because as, you know, a proper operator, we probably shouldn't, but we should understand what our variance is from a P&L perspective for any given day. And when we have an outsized variance, there's either two reasons. It was, you know, some version, like you said, Kyle, outside of your control. I was unable to get out of the position for A, B, or C reason, or, you know, I fat fingered it or whatever, or, you know, I just made a human mistake, like emotions kicked in. I added to the loser. You know, I didn't take my stop, all of the things that most people are probably on that side of it. Right. Versus, you know, some version of a black swan type event. But the key is that you're journaling it, whether it's the good reason that it's happening or like whatever the justifiable reason that it's happening or, you know, the I wish I didn't do that reason. Being aware that there's some statistical significance to how many times this happens in your journey, I think is the key part. And then, you know, again, you know, we all have these like safety mechanisms, whether it's like after three losing trades, I go take a walk, or if I have a daily stop or whatever you're doing to sort of prevent these things. At the end of the day, like you have to come back and just kind of look at the stats and go, okay, like how often is this happening to me? And when it's happening, are they for legitimate reasons? Are they for emotional reasons? And you know, work towards sort of the solution to that problem. But I mean, it's a reality. And that's why, like when we were talking about some of the topics tonight, I said, you know, like, so it's kind of dry, right? Like talking about like, oh, after three stops, you know, I'm going to go get a coffee or whatever it is. Like, yeah, we all have that stuff. But the reality of it is like, yeah, I tell myself, I write it down on this piece of paper. I have it tattooed on my wall or whatever, you know,
right.
People say all this stuff, right? Like, I mean, I literally have a thing like here, I keep it like, you know, you can do this, right? Mm-hmm. And like when I'm doing dumb stuff, you know, I try to look at that, but like the reality of it is like, we just do dumb stuff, right? Like, and so I think like that, when I said like, oh, the conversation around, you know, the preventative methods is sort of a moot point. We know the right stuff to do.
I think we covered it quite a bit actually too.
Well, and I mean, it's not necessarily obvious, I guess, but it's like, you know, I mean, it's a well-documented topic. I think the harder part and you know, the part I kind of am excited to explore is the like, okay, well, it happened.
Yeah.
Right. Now what do we do?
Right.
And I think that's like the part, like, cause I mean, I think, you know, for this group, like we all have worked with traders or work with traders or understand traders from all different levels, you know, all the way from, you know, having exposure to guys who are just absolute proper operators to, you know, people who are new or trying to figure this out or struggling. The number one thing that I see from people that are struggling, and myself included, is what do you do when you get your ass kicked, mm-hmm. right? Like, how do you get back on the horse? And I think that's like the big aha here is like, it's easy to make the mistake. It's hard to come back the next day and pretend like it didn't happen.
Sometimes it's just hard to even acknowledge it.
Yeah, or be honest with yourself of like, you know, like I call them mirror moments, man. Mm-hmm. Like you just got to look yourself in the mirror and go like, dude, who is this person that's clicking these buttons? Because I know I'm smarter than this. I know I'm capable of executing much better than what I did, you know, today, yesterday, whatever. But then you sit down at the desk the next day and, you know, and NQ, ES, whatever market you're trading, it's not going to slow down just because you hope it does and you had a shitty day yesterday, right? Like it's still going to go. It's still going to be CPI this morning. Like it's still going to be NFP this morning. Right. It's still going to be FOMC this morning. Like it's still the opening range this morning. Like you're still going to have to deal with all the same things that happen on a day-to-day basis. And I think that's like the biggest part of like, how do you then get back on the horse the following day after you make these mistakes? Because, you know, in the poker world, mistakes compound, right? Mm-hmm. Like you make a pre-flop mistake. You play a poor hand selection pre-flop from a certain position. Well, now you're playing a hand that has a range disadvantage against the player who has a range advantage and you're out of position. Well, that one mistake now compounds the mistakes that will happen on the flop, which then compound the mistakes that will happen on the turn. And by the river, you're all in and you're just absolutely dog shit dead.
Yeah, trying to convince yourself you got pot odds to call.
And trading is very much the same way because like the mistakes compound. And if you can't find a way to come to the desk the next day and trust your process, to kind of circle back to what you were saying, Bob, of like the stats piece of it, to trust your process and to sort of like get back on the horse or whatever, for lack of a better term, that's the real challenge, right? And I think like with working with a lot of people, that gun shyness, like when they're getting their teeth kicked in, is the hardest part to sort of like get over. And I don't know if it just comes from a healthy like disconnection from money or, you know, a healthy connection to the process, but it's hard to do, right? And I think that's like, you start to doubt what you're doing was profitable. You doubt your edge. You're not sure or confident in your ability to click the button. And I think we all know, I mean, any bit of hesitation, you know, can spiral and kind of lead into an area where, you know, one outsized loss turns into 10 medium losses. All of a sudden now you're like, oh, I'm only going to take my three stops and I'm going to honor it. Well, you're taking three stops 20 days in a row because you're, you know, coming to the desk scared.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, that I think that's like the biggest hard part of like, you know, what do you do the next day?
Yeah. So tell me what you do then. Like, how do you get back on the horse or back in the saddle?
Have a playbook. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So that's the biggest piece. And again, back to like what Baba was saying, like stats, data. If you don't have a playbook of very clearly defined trades that you're willing to take and understand what the edge or the EV of those trades are, you're already at a disadvantage, especially when you know you're going to face days like this. As somebody who has all these things and has lost as much as I've made, you know, the day before, the week before, the month before in one day, I still have to come back to the desk the next day. And the solace lies in the fact that I know that I have a playbook where, you know, there's A, B, and C setups, and there's, you know, the A plus, like my good old trusty. And, you know, sometimes when you get your teeth kicked in, you just got to come in and go, okay, wait a minute, what's my best setup? Like, what can I really just lean into? And where can I just call it good enough? You know, Jay, who I think we all know, you know, kind of really instilled that in me, this good enough concept. And I think after you get beat up, you know, the day before, you know, you come in, you look at your playbook and you go, okay, what's my layup trade? Like, if I see this trade, where am I just like, I'm able to execute it confidently. I understand the stats and the data behind this trade. And when I see it, I can hit it. You know, I know you guys recently had Macro on. That's kind of a big thing from him too, but that there's something in that, right? Like, just come in and like, look for the softball pitch, take it, get your base hit, and maybe just like take a green day. That's another big one, right? Like, just like take a base hit, get your green day, and just close it down and just sit on that. I don't care if it's 5 points, 10 points, whatever it is, $100, $200, $1,000, whatever a base hit looks like for you. Sometimes it's nice to just come back, get a base hit. You don't have to come back and get it all back in one day.
Yeah.
And I think that's another, you know, I mean, that's the mental side. Yes. Of like trying to get it back. Like, it's just not going to happen, right? Sometimes you make a month long mistake. Sometimes you make a 3 day mistake. And, you know, I mean, that kind of goes into the like dry topic of like, oh, don't lose more than 3 average red days, right? On one, you know, or 3 average green days on a red day or whatever. But, I mean, the reality is sometimes we lose our month, we lose our week, and we have to come back the next day, and you have to fight the emotions of trying to win back that week. Or earn back that week, because win's kind of probably a bad word for it. But just getting that A plus setup, where's my softball pitch? Looking for it, taking it, and just being like, boom, that was one great trade. And that's mainly what I do. Like, if I have a really bad day, I come in the next day and I smack one right away. That's like, I know it's right out of my playbook. It's an A plus setup, and I executed on it like relatively well. Just shut it down. There's no reason to do anything further than that, because you can now build off of that sort of confidence of like, yep, I could do this.
You reminded me of what like football teams do when they're struggling. Like, they tend to simplify the playbook, probably lean a lot more on the run. Don't throw it as much, because you don't want your quarterback to be taking the riskier plays, and you just try to get some success doing the simple things. And I think that's kind of like the exact idea of what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean,
how about you, Baba? What do you do?
It depends on there's a difference in a big outsized red day and looking at a few weeks or a stretch of trading that and being like, I just feel like I'm underperforming.
Mm-hmm.
There's a difference in those two, right? But some of the remedy is the same. And I know the topic isn't a stretch where you're, you know, whether it's dealing with outside situations that are creating unique stress or tension for you, or whether it's like a new environment or, you know, learning new skills or whatever, that can all attribute to an outsized red day out of nowhere. And it can also contribute to a stretch of just underperformance. For me, one of the things when I'm journaling after a bad day, I would say like an outsized day, is I'm trying to figure out, like, I'm trying to get to like some of the cause of it, you know, like, did I leave the reservation? You know, like, did I just start just clicking the button? Like, one of those days, it's, you know, it was like months ago, it's like five, six months ago. I just remember it was a Friday, and I just, you know, I was just,
you're just clicking away.
I was just slinging some contracts, you know, and not, and almost just kind of had like this 30 minute period where I was just flying by the seat of my pants. Like, there was not really
clicking buttons.
I was just over here playing a game.
And you look back on it, you don't even remember doing any of it.
Yeah, I look back and I was like, what in the world was that? Like, I couldn't make a case for any of those entries. Whereas on a day, and I would say like a lot of times a real outsized day, usually for me is going to come back to like a couple of key things that usually can like put me a little bit on tilt. And then when I do have a setup, I'll press or inappropriately press, or I'll add poorly. So I'll be in position well. And then I'll be like, oh, you know, it's, you know, let's pile in here in a spot that's not a great like structural or logical place to add. And then that puts your entry in jeopardy. Then you're already kind of down and you're like, well, I wouldn't really, you know, if say you were short, you're thinking, well, I sure wouldn't long here, so I'm not going to buy these shares back here. So then you eat it a little more and you start to have this internal dialogue that when you're just killing it, you're never having those conversations, right?
Yeah.
So for me, a big part of it is like rethinking and thinking back through what did I do? What was the day like? Another part is very much, whether it's a season or it's a day of just terribleness or whatever, that base hit concept can be applied in a lot of different ways, but it's huge. Like, so for me, like over the last stretch of trading, one of the things that I have joked about is like, I'm not really going for bangers. I want to have a good stretch of feeling good about like where things are and confidence, like continuing to rebuild or build on the confidence that I have. So I haven't been taking massive, like leaving massive runners, trying to hit stretch targets. Everything has been a little tidier, you know, like a little closer targets based off of, you know, work or whatever. But because I would like to finish and be able to have a little celebration with myself, you know, be excited over, you know, some of the turmoil that can come from the emotional side of seeing a trade be, you know, 60, 80 points in profit and then come back to break even. And I joked with you, Kyle, like, just give me a couple more weeks and then we'll be having competitions around runners again, right? I just give me a couple more weeks and we'll be there. And that is that logic of just get the base hits because of like how things have been for me lately. Like, that's just been a good practice. I also think that for me, like, coming in after a day where things went off the rails is going to the things that I'm most familiar with and most comfortable with. So saying it a little bit of a different way, but the same idea. Flair would say like your A-plus playbook. For me, it's going to be like in the market prep stuff, like what do I trust the most, you know? And so one of the things that I just really have a propensity towards and appreciate the display of the data is like looking at a TPO chart, both from like a weekly standpoint and a daily. And so I have leaned more into that lately, as you probably noticed, Kyle, than some of the newer stuff that we've worked on and worked with. Not because of does this work or not, but it's like what feels comfortable and what is like second nature and easy. And like, it's not like all of the work that we've ever done is worthless and TPO is the only thing that matters. But for me lately in this stretch, like I just in the last week, two maybe, have just made a disciplined effort to lean into what I feel most comfortable with.
Well, we've talked a lot about protecting your process. And I know, Flary, you're a big proponent of that. You've been drumming that beat for us for a while. I think it's kind of some of that, right? You got to be careful how quickly you start introducing new concepts into your trading. Yeah.
Well, and I think it comes from a place of like overconfidence and arrogance to think that like, I usually think like, oh, I could take like anything I see edge in, or it's like finding treasure everywhere. Like I'm going to incorporate it, or at least I'm going to look at it. Like I'm comfortable with that.
I like that.
I'm comfortable with that on the one hand, when I am trading on a stretch of, you know, good, solid results over a longer period of time, it's easier to bring in little pieces here and there. But when things have been not bad, not like the most worst thing in the world, but when things haven't been what you want, it's not the time to diddle with other things. Yeah,
hunker
it's like,
down.
Hey, man, it's business time, you know?
Simplify.
I said that to somebody this morning, like, we were joking in the chat because I traded that CPI news and made my day before we started. So today was super fun. And someone said something about, I think they misread or misunderstood where I was saying I was long farm, or they were looking at a rolled contract and they were like, oh my gosh, you're long six contracts for 300 points, and I was like, "What are you talking about?"
They're on Trading View and
and I was like, exactly, like, "No, no," I was like, "I'm not doing this for show. Like, I got to eat this money." So, no, I'm down to one runner at this point, bro. Like, and it wasn't for 300 points.
Eat this money.
So, so yeah, I think like hunkering down into the things that you're comfortable with, and that's where you may get exposed a little bit to like that. If you don't have the familiarity with a tool set, an approach, a methodology to clarify structure and like a general perspective on what you can anticipate to unfold. If you don't have that, then when you have an outsized day and we're sitting here saying, lean into what's comfortable, lean in what you know, if you don't have anything there, then your work is different. You don't need to go trade the next day. You need to really think through what helps you view and understand the auction the best, and then get really comfortable with that.
Well, that goes back to your analysis on looking back at that outsized day, right? Like you said something around the lines of like, was I just clicking buttons? Like the example you gave, like you were literally just taking trades outside of your playbook, which it as bad as that sounds, it's kind of good in a way, right? Because when you have that outsized day and you go back and you go look at your journal, if you don't have it, you go replay it or look at your executions, whatever you do. And you're like, what the fuck was I doing? I'm like clicking buttons in a spot. This was not a setup. This wasn't a setup I thought about. This isn't a setup I saw on Twitter. This is nobody's setup. This is not anything that I was supposed to be doing. There's actually something like beneficial from that, because that doesn't mean that you have to go dive in to see if your edge is starting to decay on one of your setups. It just means that you were being a jackass and trading emotionally, and that you can then go back in confidence to, you know, those softball A plus setups or whatever, to like, go back to your playbook with confidence the next day, because it wasn't your edge. It wasn't your setups. It wasn't your process. It was you. Yeah. Right. Which is actually sort of like in a way a good thing, because although it's probably the hardest part to work on, it doesn't mean that your work, your effort is for naught, or that like your edge is decaying. It just means that like you just deviated from the process for a day. And, you know, unfortunately, it cost you a week, month, whatever it did. But there's kind of like some like sort of like win in that, like when you just completely, would you say leave the reservation or something like that?
Yeah.
You know, there's like, it's like good in a way, because at least like, you know, like, oh, I didn't just, you know,
I don't have to redo the stats. Yeah.
I took my setup and I just got blasted. Yeah. And I think that's kind of a good point, you know, to sort of lean on, to come back to the next day. But man, when you have the struggles where like you're taking your process trades and you're just in a down sample, right? Like you're just not winning. And that can be almost like even more emotionally destructive, because you're like, man, do I need to like reinvent myself here? Is my edge decaying? Like what's going on? And I know we're talking about outsized days, but like sometimes just like losing a bunch can lead to the emotion of outsized days. And you have to really go back and then analyze, like, is my process a little bit jacked up, or it, you know, did I just like emotionally leave the reservation? And either one, you know, not good, but like in some way, if your process is still sound and you just like weren't really executing in areas where you normally would, in some way gives you more confidence.
I can't decide if I'd rather have my process be intact and sound, or if I'd rather have my mentality be intact and sound. I don't know which one I'd rather go fix.
Yeah, for sure.
At this juncture of the process, don't change the process. I'd rather work on me. I'll look in the mirror and, you know, whatever. But
one of the things that I usually like to fall back on, and I think I give another shout out to Purdue for this one, that it's going back and doing a lot of replay. Like when I need to rebuild some confidence, then I go back and try to replay a bunch of days until I can refamiliarize myself with, okay, these are the things that I want to see. I remember now. That's when I click the button. I wait for this.
Yeah. And it's funny, because when you do that, it's obviously a no risk environment, and you're like, so it's easy to take the, you know, the short side trade when things look really strong, because you have a setup that calls for a look above and fail, or you're in a place where failure would be detrimental. And so it's easy to do that. Then you look back at that replay day and go, and I think a good question like to think is, because of how the market can be, am I allowing maybe some of the fear to be a part of the decision maker in that, you know, because I'm assuming like on those days you either buy some strong move, like on those replay days, you're like, oh, here's a delta bar through whatever I wanted to see. It looks like I'm buying the high, but this is a trade setup that should go for 40 points. And it's easy to click it in replay mode or sim mode or whatever, right? But then like when the market's live and you're like, I have no idea what happens next, but I know that my setup would say I should get long here. Or vice versa. Pause. To the short side, it can be that hesitation, yeah, or whatever. I wanted to say that when we're talking about process, I think there's, just to clarify for the listener in the future or anybody listening now, there's two pieces to at least what I mean when I say process. So part of your process is the planning aspect, the prep before the session starts. You know, what are the three to five charts that tell you the story? You know, what three to five charts or three to five bigger picture tools inform you of some type of expectation for the day or for the week, for that matter? Okay, so what those should be fairly fixed, and you should be fairly confident in those, and you visit those every day. Every morning, you look at that. Inside of that is going to inform you generally of some areas that you'd like to execute in or some ideas that you would like to see play out. So again, for instance, like I'd like to see, there was a day this week we were looking for a pullback to two lower areas, either whatever this or this. We'd like to see responsive nature in one of these two areas to join the bid, and then we want to see us trade back, blah, blah, blah. So then when you get to those areas, there's also an aspect of, like Flary said, like a setup. What is it that's actually going to make you click, you know? Mm-hmm. So I'm in my zone. Do I see either the market structure shifting? Do I see a delta? I was going to say delta footprint. What I mean by that is like not actually a footprint chart, although it could be, but I'm saying like, do you see the hallmarks of an entry opportunity? Do you have precedent to click the button based on what you're seeing, whether that's a setup of volume tape or a setup of an impulse drive candle, a certain type of delta, large market orders, some other order flow tool, or some other something that allows you the freedom to click. So, you know, when we say process, it's like, it's both a structural observation and then an execution methodology, or at least some parameters of what you want to see in that area to get you to execute. And you need to kind of have both of those things. And a lot of times people are, you know, much more comfortable with one over the other. Like I find myself being a much better planner than I am an executor at times. So if you just read my plans for the week, which was buy a dip and hold it for a new high, simplified version, but then you'd be like, wow, that played out exactly, you know, wow, that was, you're a wizard. You knew the future.
But get into the trade.
But the dip to buy,
where's the trade?
How to fade it, how far to fade it, and where do you expect it to dip? And for me, this week was difficult on whatever day we had the big pull, because it went further to the downside than I anticipated, and actually like right to the edge of glory, which I was like, good Lord, if they don't stop that, you know, I was thinking, well, we're fixing to really lose all this. And then, you know, not only is my day all screwed up, but now my weekly plan is going to be screwed up, because instead of looking for a move through the highs, now I'm going to be looking to fade this move somewhere up through here if they continue this down move far enough to break stuff off. And but then when they held it, it was like, oh boy, here we go, you know. So your plan kind of should inform you of those areas. And then like when you have a day like we had where your areas, you know, you get setups, you take the entries and you take the stop. You get a setup, take the entry, take a stop. Get two scales off, take another stop. I mean, that's when you get into like the management. And I think we talked about this, Kyle, a little bit. Some days you are just going to zig when you should zag.
Yeah.
Like your process puts you putting on risk in the right place. And the trade that worked out is the trade that you took half size on. And like I have discretion and to vary my size within a certain range on trading and how the day's going sometimes. So whatever, but however your entries and size set up, or do you add in a spot that then ruins the trade, even though the trade played out, or you take the close exit, like the conservative exit on an entry. And this is all not just to see to your pants. You have like conservative targets and then like the stretch targets. Some days you take the conservative, you take the risky entry and the conservative exit, and you should have taken the conservative entry and the risky exit and vice versa. And then you sized, you sized wrong and you added poorly. And it's just like, yeah, I just didn't execute and manage really well today. And that can be because of the market environment, or it can just be because you had an off day. I mean, sometimes the best athlete is going to go out with and have a poor performance, and they're doing what they plan to do, you know? So that's, and like, again, that can lead to an outsized day. But if you look back at the day through your journaling and through your review process and go, you know, I mean, I would probably take those trades again.
Right.
That's the key, is would you take the trades again, right? Yeah. Like, was there something wrong with the trade?
Yeah.
Or was there something wrong with, you know, my execution of the trade? And Kyle, you kind of said it too, like the sports analogy, right? Like when you're struggling, you know, sometimes you just, you know, hit the run, right? Like you just like try to get a first down. Don't go for the creative, like edge of, you know, like whatever, bleeding edge ads in the trade. Like just wait to see if the thing goes to your damn target. Just see if your thesis was correct and take the win good enough and go home for the day. Right. Like you don't need to innovate some like, you know, crazy 50 point pullback, you know, ad, and then you're back in full and the thing gets ripped and like you break even on the trade. It's like, dude, just get short, hit your target, go home. Right. Like, oh, yep. Look, my process still works. But I think too, like what you were saying about process of breaking it down, I call it like directional bias, right? So like there's some stuff that you look at that gives you directional bias, and then there's setups. And I think both are key, right? Like, because if you're going to get back on the horse the day after getting your ass kicked, you can't change any of that stuff, because you shouldn't just make the assumption that all of a sudden you suck at all of the things that you spent hours and hours at your desk, away from your family, like, you know, staring at charts doing. You don't just throw it away because you had one bad day. You come back and you know, I mean, you do have to be analytical about the fact of like, hey, is my edge decaying? But you're not going to find that out like overnight, right? Like you have to come back down. You have to go look at all the same, like you said, like four or five charts, you know, develop your directional bias, and then, you know, find your areas of interest and, you know, wait for your setups to set up. And, you know, maybe you don't need to add and all those things, but I think that's a big piece, because if you don't have those sort of like, you know, whatever you want to call them, cornerstones or foundational pieces, like what do you lean on the next day? That's where the trouble really starts to spiral, is where you're just like, man, not only do I not know if I didn't take a process trade, or if I followed my process yesterday, or if maybe I like slept in a little bit and I didn't look at my normal charts, I didn't have a directional bias, and I thought my setup was valid, but it wasn't because I didn't look at all the charts I'm supposed to, and all the, like, there's those answers. And then there's the like, okay, I did everything right. Like I just was an asshole today and I added when I shouldn't have, or I put in too many contracts, or I didn't take my stop. You got to just come back the next day and do those things. So there was a question in chat, like, you know, how do you come back the next day? Do you journal review? The review would be exactly what you said, Bob, is was it a breakdown of my process? Did I follow my process and I executed correctly, and there was some outsized event that happened, right? Like, did I think this was a super A-plus setup? I sized up like multiple R in the trade and I just got my ass handed to me. Or was it just me adding to a loser? Or was it just me, you know, moving my stop? Or was it just me entering in a position or to a position in a place where I just like, it was not a process trade? And if the answer to all of those is no, right? Like that's the journal part, review the day. Like, what did I do actually? And be honest with yourself, right? Like, what did I do? Was it me, or was it my process? Was it me like, you know, leaving the reservation, or was it just, you know, maybe there's some, you know, more work to do on Saturday with, you know, the group of work that I'm doing. But like, that's the review. The review isn't necessarily like, how bad is this going to be? How much money did I lose? Whatever. It's, did I leave the reservation or did I not? No, I didn't. Okay, cool. The next day, then, you come back to the desk and you do the same thing. Now, if you do that a few days in a row and you're still seeing bad results, like, okay, maybe it's time to go do something different. But for me, that's it. Like, it's just be honest with yourself. Like, and it's pretty obvious. I mean, honestly, like, if we're really, really just like being true and honest about it, like, you know it before you even click the damn button or before you move the stop, right? Like, yeah. You know what got you to the outsized loss before you even get there. Honestly, you probably know you should just flip long and you probably, you know, make the money back. I love how all my references are like, I'm losing money short.
Well, that's probably pretty topical too.
I mean, it is, right? Yeah. But like, you know, again, by the grace of God, there you go. I know, like, usually I do dumb stuff trying to short. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, so like for me, it's just like that. Just go look at it. What did I leave the reservation? Did I not? If not, then I need to look at my process. If yes, change nothing. Just get back in. Yeah, size down, right? Like, just size down, hit the softball, and just like and hit your A+ trade. Stacks, but like, without a process, without some version of like directional bias, areas of interest, whatever you want to call it, or just like a really like clearly defined setup, how do you come back the next day and look for a softball pitch if you don't even fucking have a bat, right? Like, what do you do? And so I think that's the key, right? Like, so if you're having these outsized days and then the next day you come back and you go, well, what do I do today? Well, the problem isn't the outsized day. The problem isn't your journaling. The problem is, you know, you don't have that foundation to lean against first. So I think, like, you know, whether it's cart in front of the horse or not, like, there's journeys to this thing, or like whatever levels to this journey. But, you know, I mean, when assuming you're already there, you either did it to yourself or you didn't, right? Like, and it should be relatively easy to get back on the horse the next day, because the goofy thing is like, the winning trades just win, right? Like, the process just wins. Like, your edge is just your edge. So it's just a matter of just getting back in there and taking the trades. So you just have to wait for the setup and just not be impatient and not just do dumb shit the next following day. Easier said than done sometimes, but like, also, you know, I mean, don't trade the first 5 minutes, right? Yeah. Like, we're going to talk about rotations here soon. Like, statistically, the rotations in the open in like the first couple minutes, like, how often do we get a trend day? It's so rare, but yet everybody's trying to catch the first dip in the first 32 seconds of the open, and they almost never go more than like 35, 40 points, like, as far as rotations go. So like, you're trying to like make up for a 700 point loss you had the other day, and the, you know, rotation in the first 30 seconds of the open typically doesn't go more than like 25 points. And here you are like 17R. In, you know, 5 seconds into the open. And I mean, right? Like, yeah. And you're hoping that this is going to just run. Cause that's, I mean, honestly, I think that's another thing that we do, is we evacuate the process of like, normally I would enter this trade here. I know the expectancy or the EV starts to decay, say at like 20, 30 points or whatever the setup is. Well, but maybe the setup sometimes goes like 50, 60, 70 points. And now, instead of like paying yourself for the trade, you're trying to hold the entire damn thing for this like outsized, like, yeah, okay, some percentage of the time my setup goes to this, you know, 70 points or whatever.
I do that.
But most of the, like, how guilty, I mean, I do that all the time when I'm losing. Mm-hmm. Like, this
start pushing for the next target, skipping.
Instead of this being an average, like, say, like 2.5R trade, I try to make that entry then turn into like a 10R trade, because I'm not going to take any profit. And we all know, you know, what happens next is you end up taking a scratch or worse, like a full size loss on a trade that normally would have been like a 2, 2.5R, 3R trade, or whatever. But I mean, at the end of the day, it's all just like introspective of this stuff. And you have to have a foundation, because if you're going to come back the following day and recover and just get back on the horse, you have to have something that you can just like confidently lean into. And if you don't have that, the first piece is go back and develop whatever that version is, which you guys have done a really good job of outlining a bunch of things that you can do to sort of build that foundation and work towards. But
both of you guys have done a lot of that.
Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back. Fresh off a rebrand and ready to help is Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address.
Welcome to Prime Video's Culture-Rated Collection. This is the place where Black is the main character, where we don't jump through hoops just to hear our voice and can fall in love with illuminating documentaries like Giannis, The Marvelous Journey.
I'm just a hard worker that's trying to survive.
Enjoy the animated series, The Second Best Hospital in the Galaxy.
All doctors report immediately!
Where we dive into something new like the latest season of Them, The Scare, and the award-winning American Fiction.
Welcome home, baby!
Or add to the experience by buying or renting the biopic of a legend, Bob Marley, One Love.
I want my music to unify people.
And add on channels like Paramount Plus and Stars to bask in nostalgia with Beverly Hills Cop.
This is the cleanest police car I've ever been in my life.
And BMF.
You're about to take over the whole nation.
Explore Prime Video's culture-rated collection and enjoy old school greats and new school hits. Prime Video, find your happy place. Restrictions apply. See Amazon.com/AmazonPrime for details.
Okay, we've hinted at ADRs a couple times. I've been seeing a lot of people talk about ADRs, average rotations, and you guys just kind of did it again here. Talk to me about like what that is, why that's important, how you guys use it. Now, I'll leave it open to however you guys want to take this conversation, but talk to me, educate me on ADRs, convince me why I should have it, why it pays rent on your chart, I guess is the question.
Well, I don't have an ADR, like a traditional ADR on my chart. So that would be one thing. Like, I do look at swing rotation size on various time frames. So, and there's been times I've leaned more into that and times I've leaned less into that, but I think awareness is pretty important. Say, let's go to like 4 hour chart, 4 hour chart average swings, right? Oh, well, that the average four-hour swing is 240 points or whatever it is. I don't have it in my mind right at this moment, but Flary probably could tell me what it is within a few seconds.
243 points.
Is it 243?
For a move, 134 for a leg.
Yeah, there you go. So I knew I was somewhere in there. What you can't do is go, I'm not in a position, but we're at 200 points on this rotation, so I'm just going to start taking longs. That would not necessarily be the best way to apply the information, so much as having an awareness of statistically what's like within reason and what's outside of it. So it's not necessarily a place to start fading just on the principle of we've gone too far. That's never like going too far. There's not such a thing. Today we went down too far for everyone that was trying to dip by all day. Right?
No, but if you're getting close to like that average number and you have a key shelf there
and you're still in a full position, well, that, yeah. Or you have a
then
great,
maybe you start peeling some profit off or something.
Yeah, you have a setup for when you have a setup that you look for that's specific to range extension extremes, right? So like it's more of like you said, Kyle, if you have, let's say you take a trade and you're in some size and you've scaled some, and you're approaching like what the edge of what's reasonable for whatever rotation time frame you're looking at, or for like a daily range, like you can look at options and find the expected move. That's not a bad place to start, or even something like that's just a great thing to keep in mind. You can do that for a week. It changes. We used to post it every week. Felt like not updating it was not helpful, and I wasn't going to update it every day, so we don't post it as much, but if you're in a trade with some size, whatever, and you're reaching to those edges, I feel like it can form, it's a good place to lighten up your size. But then also when you extend past what's reasonable, that's when you get into those momentum driven extensions. So that's why I say it's not a place just to flatten up completely And it's not a place to just immediately start digging for the other direction, because I think you have to consider the momentum that's playing out. If we've moved already to like the average daily's range, which I think we did today, and then continued past it quite a bit, probably another
hit both sides,
100 points. Yeah, both ways. I mean, 100 points below. Yeah, over 100 points below to the downside. And what was it above, Fleary? It was basically to it.
Yeah, because we journeyed up.
That's right. Yeah. I got it. So moral of the story is, when you are approaching the edges of what you statistically would think, it doesn't just mean flatten up and flip the trade, because if we extend past that, then there's this spooling effect that can take place, or this unwind. So you want to be, if you're already positioned for the downside and we've traded and we're trading below that, and you're already scaled and you're in a runner, then that's a fine place to let it go. I've seen us extend. Once we get going, man, it gets dramatic. Look at the afternoon. Like, it gets
right.
It gets going, right? So that would be like structurally or whatever the way to think about it. You know, like, oh, a day's range is this big. Well, that doesn't mean that if we open up there at the top of it, you just automatically fade it. That can mean that there's a serious catalyst and there's real momentum behind this move, and we could really extend, or vice versa. Oh, we're down so far, we're opening on a gap down, I'll buy the dip to close the gap because we're down here close to the bottom of the range. No, it needs to be a little more informed than that, because we can get the momentum going and just continue to unwind. So that would be my first point of ADRs and ranges.
Jesus, that was the first point?
Yeah, or like my first four. Flair, you make a few points. Don't disagree with what I said, though. Don't make me look dumb, all right?
Stay on the same page
here, buddy.
This is an interesting topic, because I think there's a lot of edge here. And not that I don't want to just, like, whatever, openly share, but, like, there's a lot. So I will just preface it with saying, if you trade the 1 hour, if you trade blah, blah, blah Renko chart, if you trade a 5-12 tick, if you trade 1 minute charts, if you don't understand what, I call it legs and moves. So a leg would be just sort of like a one-time framing move. It could be small, or a sequence of, you know, several small ones, like an up, down, or whatever. A move would be like a sequence of either a bunch of small legs that travel, you know, sort of like an average, sort of like, you know, from a major high time frame swing low to a high time frame swing high, but maybe there's like 4 hour legs inside of it. Either way, a leg and a move. If you don't understand what those stats are on every time frame that you trade, and more importantly, your setups from your playbook, which we should have, what time frame they're executing on, most likely, right? Or what time frame you're statistically running your edge on, you're at a massive disadvantage. Massive disadvantage, because rotation work and understanding range and rotation is easily the most statistical, easy way to quantify your edge, your stop, your take profit. And there's just some really, really cool things that you can do around it. I posted this week on Twitter, or X, or whatever the fuck it is now.
Twitter. We don't call it
Twitter.
X.
Yeah.
No, we don't say that here.
We hit a daily level in ES, and the daily average rotation for a leg in ES is 97.81 points right now. When we hit that level, I basically said, okay, if we don't go 97 point whatever points, we don't even get to a minimum leg off of this level. That's going to tell you a lot about momentum, right? And the comment was, I think, right, we hit this daily level, we're in a very bullish market, the daily trend is up. When we pull back into daily support, we hit it, we should go 97 points. Statistically, we should just go 97 points. A move is much further than that. But if we don't, that starts to tell you some things about momentum. We actually went, I think we went like 105 points. So we went from that daily level about, you know, just about to the average leg. But without that information, however you're doing it, whether you're doing it through some code, or, you know, just running some math, or just like going back and back testing it, whatever you're doing, understanding what a rotation on the timeframes that your setups come from is massively important. And there's some just like really cool things, like you mentioned, you know, we're looking to potentially fade legs. Or macro calls it like the washing machine, right? If you have legs or rotations that are small, like none of them are reaching the average rotation. So like on NQ, let's just say you're doing a bunch of like 25 point rotations. Well, an average rotation on NQ is, I mean, an RTH rotation for this week was 70 points. The average rotation in NQ this week was 70 points. So, you know, at least on the time frame that I'm watching it on. If you're doing a bunch of 25 point rotations, you're in the washing machine. And so if you're sitting there as a positional intraday trader trying to get a 50, 60 point trade, and we've done seven 25 point rotations, you're going to be in a world of hurt. Right. Like if you're a scalper, you're loving life. Right. But like your time frame, that's probably an outsized move. Right. 25 points or something like that. But understanding that piece of it and also understanding, OK, what happens when we are failing to get to an average rotation? What happens if I'm trying to take a setup that hasn't gotten to an average rotation yet? Right. Which is one of my favorite things to do is let's say we're pulling into an area that is one of my like A plus, like, you know, whatever, like a trend break level or something like that. We pull into an area where I expect a reoffer to come from, but we've only taken, say, a 25 point rotation into that area. Just let it cook. Let it cook. Let it go the 35, 40 points. Let it reverse, confirm, because taking price risk versus confirmation risk when the rotation into your price risk area or your area of interest isn't significant enough is, I mean, it's, you're just asking for trouble. And so at the end of the day, understanding what the rotations are on the timeframes that you're watching is huge edge, huge edge.
Larry, do you know of any literature or any places you'd point to if people wanted to like read up and study on this? Or is this just something you're going to have to like buckle up and do a lot of work yourself?
I mean, it's just kind of one of those things. I think you have to do some work. I'm sure there's some good literature on like understanding rotations. I'll say this. I think probably one of the people who doesn't give away a ton of information, but shares relatively openly their template or their chart. And you just have to do the work to kind of figure out what they're doing. T-Plex, I think that he had his Twitter nuked and now he's like M. Laban or something like that. He does some amazing work with the Renko chart. And most of it is based in and around like rotation work plus some other stuff that obviously he's doing. But he truly is a master of understanding the rotations on a bunch of different products that he's looking at. And I think just like going back and looking at his feed would be very beneficial. But I will say this, like the cool thing about rotations is at the end of the day, you're trying to define a swing high and a swing low, right? And in order to do that, you need a constant. And once you have a constant, you can develop a data like set, right? Once you have a data set, you can start to understand what is the average rotation. And that process is the key. Defining the swing high and the swing low, having a constant to define that swing high and swing low, which the Renko chart is really good for because it has a set reversal, right?
Right.
Let's say you're on a NQ, whatever, 40-30, right? Like it takes, every brick is 10 points. It takes 10 points to go down. It takes two bricks to reverse plus whatever your trend reversal offset is. So you know there's a constant, right? Every time we make a swing low on a Renko chart, you know exactly how many points it was from a swing high to a swing low. Another version would be like harmonics, right? So I want to see two one-time framing candles down, and then I want to see a candle that closes higher than the candle that made the low or whatever it is. So some sort of like pattern, right? Price action pattern. Once you can define what you, whether it's a harmonic or, you know, a Renko chart or whatever you're doing, once you have that constant and you can truly define a swing low and a swing high, you can start to aggregate the information and really define what an average rotation looks like on that time frame. And then you can really start to dive into some really cool math around, you know, what to expect. And, you know, I mean, you can just start to develop some really cool trades from that point.
I got to say thank you for that explanation, because I think something just kind of clicked in my head as you're walking through that. And Baba, we've talked about it before. One of the triggers that I know is my like stop trading is when trades that look like they should work don't.
Oh yeah.
But now I think I actually have a metric that I can go back and look at now. If I can define an average daily rotation or the true rotations of that time frame that I'm looking at, now I've got something quantifiable that I could say, hey, this isn't reaching these points. I need to reevaluate what I'm doing, or I need to step away or come back when the conditions are different.
Yeah, I think it can really, too, like, a couple of nuggets to throw in there. So one would be like, it's along the lines of rotations, but like where a real high is going to happen or like a real low, and the nature characteristics that seem to be hallmarks of a swing high. There's a couple ways you can like real structurally define a move to a swing high. And there's probably videos out there about different ways of doing that. The other thing is like where we're trading in relation to like candle, I would say like the opens, especially on like an hourly time frame, into areas that potentially could form swing highs. It's just really interesting and key. Like go take a chart, throw up an hourly chart, look at the obvious past, not talking about identifying new ones. Just look at the hourly chart and look at the most obvious swing highs and swing lows and see what you find just of the candle structure around them, what seems to stand out.
Mm-hmm.
I think one thing for me is like the opens and closes, and you have like the open and the next, or the close of the prior candle, the open of the next candle, and how some of that starts to unfold. It can get kind of interesting into swing highs and lows. Just something to look at. The other thing I would say that I have been doing that's a little different than some of the work Flair's been doing, but it's in the same vein, is just having ranges mapped out on your chart. Like I just have like 80 point ranges mapped out on my chart and from a few different key spots, just blank, like just staggered 80 point ranges from that are from certain key spots.
Just an extension basically, like a.
Sort of. Yeah. Yeah. Sort of. You could start there and play with it. And then inside, and then that really paints a picture of how we like work a range. Mm-hmm. So if I have a swing low into one of these lines on my chart, then like I already know where the corresponding, like if I'm looking for two rotations off of this certain setup and I don't get that, there's also a trade there to the other side, because we're failing.
Mm-hmm.
We're simultaneously creating a real F up by the buyers or sellers. And we've talked about this a little bit offhand, like in chat, like I've said a few things like, oh, now that's a move down that could get the sellers in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you get like the hallmarks of a swing low and the pacing of that starts to fail and you're like, oh, I know exactly, like, if the buyers can just do this, then they have just totally, they've now taken that, flipped it on its head and created structure out of it. And if all of that unfolds, then I anticipate, you know, I should see this type of rotation out of here. So again, like as we're kind of belaboring the point, rotations are really important. And if you see your entries getting, you know, and it's been frustrating to me at times until sort of recently, but like, if you see your entries just not going, like, damn, that was a really good entry. Almost no one could have a better entry. I go to the footprint chart and say there's only, you know, 23 people that had a better entry than I had here, right? Like, I know it was a great entry, and it still takes a stop. Like, and it doesn't even go a rotation or two, then like, all right, that's, we know who's actually driving the bus. Yeah.
That's a big key too. Like, so there's a lot of different metrics that you can take from this rotation piece. I'll be quick, but I think the three would be, one, once you understand the rotation on your execution based chart, or like the time frame that you're looking mainly to execute on, you can gauge your stop based on that, right? So if it rotates further than, like when you enter and it rotates down against you, if you're long, further than an average rotation, you're probably in trouble, right? Like there's just no reason to continue to, because we're just now rotating the other direction.
Mm-hmm.
The other part is like sort of for taking profit, right? Like, so if an average rotation on the time frame that you're executing is 50 points and you're paying yourself, you know, okay, whatever, pay yourself a 20 or whatever you want to do. But if you're taking, if you only have not, like 10% of your position left by the time you get to an average rotation, there's a problem there, right? Like it just, something doesn't line up. The other part, which is kind of what you mentioned, was today on the move up from the bottom, when we finally found one, we did a 74 point up rotation, 27 point down rotation, followed by a 57 point up rotation, followed by a 24-point down rotation, followed by a 54-point up rotation, followed by a 21-point down rotation. Well, what does that tell you about trying to take shorts?
They're not winning.
Right? Yeah. Like, I mean, by the time the short is even confirmed, right? And we're making, like, if you, I mean, unless you're taking just pure price risk in a face melter up, you know, I mean, by the time we even have any sort of confirmation to the trade, it's reversing the other direction. Right. And so there's another piece of that of like, okay, let's wait for a solid down rotation, right? So if the market is melting up and we're seeing these 70, 50-point up rotations, but the down rotations are only 20 points, we'll wait for there to be a larger down rotation. So after that sequence happened, what happened? We had a 49-point down rotation, and now the up rotation got smaller. Well, guess what the next down rotation was? 81 fucking points. So, you know, I mean, you're sitting there trying to fade a market that's sold off all day. We have a 75-point up rotation and then a 20-point, a 50-point, then a 20-point. Well, all of a sudden, if you just wait for there to break and there's a 40-point down rotation and then you buy the next lower high, well, the next move is 80 points, mm-hmm. right? So there's something to understanding not only sort of like the dynamics of how these markets sort of break these rotational patterns. There's time of day stuff to it. There's just so much cool sort of math nerdy stuff that you can get into behind it that it's at the very least, without just sort of like giving away too much sauce, it's an area where I think time is valuably spent looking into, specifically on the time frames that you trade. And there is there's substantial edge in sort of understanding the time of day, the average rotation, what happens when we fail to make down rotations in an upwards moving market, what happens when we fail to make down rotate or up rotations in a downwards moving market, what happens after we go past the average rotation, how much further on average do we go past the average rotation. There's just so much cool stuff that you can start to dive into, but without the constant, you can't sort of define what these average rotations are. And I think that's sort of like the key there, right? Is like you have to be able to define what is a swing high and a swing low for you on your time frame, whether it's harmonic, whether it's you know, a Renko reversal, whatever it looks like. So it's giga alpha, as we like to say.
Where have you been, Flurry? I'm a little annoyed that I had to wait 3 months to get this alpha leak. We got a page full of notes here.
Dude, hockey season, man. Hockey season.
That's all right, man. What do you guys say we do some good, bad, and ugly then?
Let's roll.
Maybe get some bold predictions and get out the door.
Let's get it.
All right, who wants to kick us off then? Talk about anything good. You can talk about anything bad, anything ugly. I'll leave it open to you. One of each, one or the other, however you want to do it.
Let's do one of each. Bobby, you fire first, man.
All right, so the good was today. Today was good. Today was a good day. Today was on the right side. Actually, post RTH open, my trading wasn't stellar. It was a little better than break even, not great, but my pre RTH open trading was outlandishly wonderful. And yeah, I banged the
bangers.
Yeah, I took that CPI trade and it was good. It was really good. And I took it with some size and that was nice. And yeah, just felt zero. Like I traded in such a way during RTH that it was impossible for the market to ruin my weekend, basically. Oh,
I fucking love that. Yeah.
So that was great. So then the bad was that today, and this is the way she'll do you sometimes. I was like, well, I'm going to trade it. I'm going to turn my charts to sim mode. My wife had some stuff to do. And I was like, I'm just going to trade the rest of the day, trading it like it was a normal day. And I absolutely absolutely traded lights out the rest of the day. I traded until right before in period challenge. It would have been I don't know, you never know if you would have been as bold in your execution or not, but I was following what was laid out, like setup entry. I mean, it was like 650 or something points, you know, on four contracts.
Why is that bad?
It was bad because I should have done it. I should have not turned it to sim mode and played. I should have just stayed in my head in the game all Friday, because that washout move once we got back into value from, it was just over with. Like, yeah, there was no more dip to buy. It was just, and it was so fast and smooth and
it was beautiful.
So anyways, and you took the trade. I won't take your thunder. And then, so that was good. That was bad. The ugly was that dip day that went further than we thought. And it ended up being a little bit of, it ended up being kind of an outsized downside day for me. That was frustrating. It was just an ugly trading day to look back on. Wrote some stuff down, processed it, like whatever. But you know,
was that the day I asked you if you were doing all right?
Yep, it was. Yeah, which is cool. That's a cool part of, like, I feel like everyone here at some point has had someone else check in on them or reach out to them in some way when we're trading, and
it's very appreciated when that happens. Yeah. I will say from experience.
Yeah. So I appreciate that, and I message you as such, like that. Yep. Thank you for being concerned. And it wasn't like I was getting them. I mean, I think I was probably expressing visually that I was like, "This," but
There's a couple things you said where you could hear like frustration that you don't normally hear.
Yeah, but which is good, because that would mean normally I'm pretty much chill and just hanging out. But I was a little bit cool with how that went, because I didn't just, you know, come undone, I guess I would say. So that's a good thing. And that's it. Good, bad, ugly.
All right, so sounds like a decent week overall.
Yeah.
All right, Flair, you want to go or you want me to go?
Fire away.
All right. Well, I too had an amazing week as far as results go. Actually, now $700 away from passing my first eval account, which has got me feeling pretty good.
Let's go.
I also got some other kind of really cool news that I can't really share much of the details on yet, but let's just say it has the potential to be something like really big for the podcast. Hopefully I can share some details in the next month or two on that. One last good, and this one I'm just going to throw in there, because I ended up having to go to the ER for, somebody didn't know how to read an EKG when I was just going to get some checkup stuff done. So they sent me to the ER because just to be on the safe side. But when I got weighed in at the doctor's office, I thought I was like 200 pounds. Apparently my scale is like 15 pounds off, because, I weigh 185 and
bonus.
Haven't been that light since probably like 2013. I was feeling pretty fucking good about that.
Let's go.
All right, let's talk about the bad. So I know I got away with more than one poor decision this past week. And I had a pretty good chat with Purdue. He pointed out how those outlier losses are like really impacting my performance. That's kind of what led to some of the conversations that I wanted to have today. Going forward, I decided to take his advice, though. I have a much tighter daily stop in, and I'm not going to be trading the minis for a while, I think. That's part of what I had been doing, was just slinging some minis on one of those cheap TopX accounts just to see if I can get a head start. And then once I got, you know, 500 or 1,000 in the bank, then I'll trade it for real. But
I hope that my approach to those 50K combines hasn't influenced you at all, because it's a $1,500 win or a $1,000 loss. I just enter a trade and then minimize.
We'll get to that in the ugly here. But
oh, shit.
What I have been doing, though, is I rotate the accounts based on the P&L. So whichever account is the highest, I don't touch it. I go to the lowest, try to trade it up to where it's not the lowest, and whatever the lowest account is for that day, that's the account I'm going to trade. There's something that in my head, I want to be capital preservation, which is retarded on an eval account because there's no capital to protect. But yet, like, there's something about having that number being at the highest it's ever been, and I don't want to fuck with that. So I'll go trade one that's not there, push it above that to where that one's now no longer the highest, and then I can go to it, and I just have a much better headspace, I think, when I'm trying to trade these things. So I've been playing around with that. I kind of like that aspect, but I am going to do a much better job of having a tighter daily stop, so I'm not taking those $1,000 drawdowns, limit it to like 400. If I hit 400, okay, I'll switch to another account if I'm still feeling good and I'm still reading things well, my emotions aren't compromised. And if I'm trading like a jackass, then I'll just shut it down and be done for the day. Now, when it comes to my ugly, that was the trade on Friday that you were alluding to. It was a great snap entry, and I do believe that I have edge in recognizing major moves like that. But the problem was, when I put that trade on, I had zero risk controls on it. I just went max size, started to set a take profit, and then decided to put a couple more in there at some key swing lows, and was just going to walk away and let it be what it was going to be. Now, that was an account I took some drawdown on and I was trying to recover from. So it was coming up on renewal, and I kind of used that as justification. But, like, I don't know. I feel like if you're starting to let some of those YOLO type trading things like creep in, even if it's in special scenarios, like you're still getting rewarded for doing bad things. And I don't know that I necessarily want to continue doing that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Those are the worst. Like, yeah. When you win when you're not supposed to.
I know.
Positive negative reinforcement or something like that.
And it would have been a fine trade if I just would have put a freaking stop on it. I just needed to, all I needed was a stop, and I would have loved that trade. So, I mean, that pretty much wraps up my week then. Flurry, how about you, man? How'd you do?
All right, I'm going to start with the ugly so that we finish on a positive affirmation. Okay, so we'll do one poker ugly because I have to tell a bad beat story. Last night, played a pot for basically like a day two chip lead-ish bag. Pocket tens, I go all in, get called by pocket fours and king queen, which both had me covered. Flop top set of tens on a 10-9 like deuce board. The pocket fours shove all in, give me weird protection that didn't need to happen. King queen just goes, I'll call, and spikes a jack on the river. And I went from a 90% favorite with one card to go to, watching everyone bag day two. So that was my ugly for poker and my bad beat story. Ugly in the trading streets. Had some UB trades that just kind of got away from me. UB is such a fickle thing. UB and CL are kind of on that, like, when they run good, they run good. The margin of error is just much smaller, and sometimes, you know, my approach to NQ can bleed into my trading in UB and CL, and it's sometimes a recipe for disaster. So I had a couple of, along the topic of like outsized losses, I had some losses that were at least outside of process. So I'll just call that ugly because I've been doing pretty well on sort of sticking to the process. I would say the bad this week, like a pseudo bad. There's a couple of like A+ trades that just the way the market was moving, like Bobby, you mentioned it, like was like pulling back deeper than it had been. The dip not like the dip a little dippier than was comfortable recently. And I skipped a couple of setups that were just like very clear in the process, like at levels where I would have done it. And it was just like more of like operating from an area of fear. On a couple of setups, just one part feeling out the market and like
necessarily.
But it is fear though, right? Because you do the work and you should sort of like, just because the market's moving fast and it's pulling into your area or whatever, whatever happened the day before or whatever. It was more of like an emotional decision of like, I don't want to take these trades. And I think like just the market has a way of just like being like, oh really, you don't want to take this one? Look at us. Look at it go.
There you go.
I think that would be the ugly is like there was a handful of like passes where it was like probably passes out of like just an area of fear, not necessarily good enough, which I'm okay with. Like, I'll skip this one, good enough for today.
But Flurry, is there a difference for you from passing on fear versus passing on like something looks different or off?
Yeah, I mean, like today, I would have not taken along until, honestly, mm-hmm. like even at the end of the day, it still looked pretty violent. You could just sometimes you see it, right? Oh, the tape's not normal or whatever. Like the sellers, the boys were there today. Buying the dip was just not a thing, regardless of what level it was pulling into. But these were like setups, man. They were just like A+ setups. Mm-hmm. And it was just more of like, I'm just scared to take this trade. I'm just not comfortable for whatever reason. I did a lot of Euro market trading this week too. So I was like tired, just like stuff mm-hmm. going on and, whatever. So just operating from a place of fear, which is a dangerous place to operate. So I would call that sort of like the bad. And then the good, my goddaughter, I posted this on Twitter too. My goddaughter, who I try to be like the cool uncle, right? Like get cool, Christmas presents for and all that stuff. And, she's younger, whatever, 15, 16 years old. She's just got her license or permit. So normally it's like a gift card to Lululemon or, you know, Sephora or whatever the makeup thing is, like, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
So this year I said, listen, I'm getting you a crypto wallet and I'm buying you some meme coins. And she's like, what are you talking about? I was like, listen, here's the deal. I said, you're going to bag hold these things and come next Christmas or whatever. Like, there's an opportunity for this to be like, you know, something cool. Like maybe, you know, whatever. You go on spring break with your friends or whatever. Who knows? Whatever you do with it. So anyways, I dumped some money into a wallet. I bought her a little basket of some meme coins. And this last week was like, obviously very good for that. She was just like ecstatic. So that was pretty cool. So that was my good. She was like, you know, what normally is just like a gift card and a like, hey, we love you, was like, oh my gosh, what do I do with this now? And I was like, well, that's like, my job's done. You have to figure that out. Like, you can sell half, you can do whatever. I said, I'm not telling you whether or not you should bag hold this thing or not, because, you know, whatever. But that was a pretty cool one. She was ecstatic. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, man. It was a fun one.
Yeah, happy birthday. I got you an addiction.
She's like, you got any more of that Pepe coin? Let's go. I mean, she bag held like down 50%. So I was like the shitty uncle, like, oh, great Christmas present. All the shit's down 50%. Yeah. And it, like, she has a couple of 10Xers, so it was pretty cool.
Oh, nice. So,
nice.
Yeah.
I know you can pick some good fucking meme coins,
let's
too.
Let's go. I mean, it's pretty hard to pick a bad one these days. Anything on the Sol market, let's go.
Oh, there you go. All right, let's do a bold prediction and let's wrap this thing up so we can get everybody to bed.
Let's do it.
So last time we did one of these, we all tried to pick the jobs report, and I kind of like that. It made it a little easier to track it. So we've got CPI and PPI next week that we can choose between if we want to try to do another one of those, try to predict the results.
Yeah, boy.
All right, which one do you want to do, and who wants to go first?
I'll go first. I think we see negative news. Some of the work is just leaning towards downside expected moves. And I think it's a bold prediction. We can't say if. If the market will get moving, and I think we could lose the daily trend. I think it's vulnerable. And as much as the dip has been being bought, I think the market is getting close to that place. We made the high finally in RTH, the all-time high in RTH. And I think the daily trend is vulnerable. It's within reach. And those data events, if they come in hot to the downside, could push us to that area, cause the daily trend. And we hadn't lost the 1 hour and 4 hour trend, as far as I track it, for like, you know, weeks. It was just kind of going on in that sort of move. So the daily trend, 17,327. So it's like 2 days, 3 days away. And so if we kind of grind down and we're within like sort of a day reach by the time we get to some of these econ events, I think that we potentially see the daily trend get lost for the first time in what would be like months.
Okay, that's an interesting spin on this. So you're going to predict that the daily trend is lost after PPI or CPI?
I'm going to go towards the latter end of the week.
That's, I like that.
Yeah, the latter end of the week. PPI. Yeah, so it'll probably like stair step down. We get two hot events. And then, you know, I think coming into like Friday, Thursday, Friday, we could lose the weekly trend. And that's a lose it, test it, nuke it, right? So then that sets up the following week being some big, like, I mean, we could pull back like 800 points and everyone saying, oh, it's just, you know, whatever. And then the big one.
Then we just rip tits.
Well, it looks like we rip tits, but then we sell off from that. So we lose it, we test it, and then we nuke it. And when we nuke it on the daily, that's where we start talking, you know, 14, 15, stuff like that. So it's possible. So bold prediction, we lose the daily trend, which sets up, you know, that larger pullback that I think like almost everybody's just sort of like leaning into the exit on.
I like it. Baba, what do you got for us?
So are we're going PPI? Is that our...
Yeah, let's all keep it to PPI.
PPI. So
stick with the PP, Baba.
Stick with the PP. We've got core. What is that's on Thursday?
You got core, and then you've got year over year.
Yeah, is year over year? Let me pull that up. Well, anyways, I think it's gonna probably be bad. So I think it's gonna be a miss. I don't know if I have to give a like a specific number.
Well, do you want it to be bold?
So the actual, yeah, I guess it could be. So let's look back at the Jan 12, we'll go month over month. Jan 12, actual was 0, forecasted at 0.2. Feb 16th was 0.5, forecasted at 1. It was negative 0.5, right? Is that correct? Am I reading that properly?
I don't know. The one I'm looking at says it was 0.6 for February for core PPI, and year over year was 0.9.
Oh, Jesus.
Core PPI year over year was 2.6.
Okay, then give me your what does your say the expectation is, and then I'll tell
you. It doesn't say. I don't have a median forecast this time. We're operating blind, buddy.
Oh, God. It's going to miss by half of whatever they say it'll be.
Jesus,
Bear says 3.7.
What does Bear say?
He said it was 3.
You think it's going to be half of what? So it'll be too much.
Yeah, then. It'll be worse than what they think. So if they think it'll be, you know, 3, what do they? Well, we don't have an expectation. So that's.
Well, unless Bear is telling us, is that the expectation, Bear? 3.7? Oh, he's just going bold.
You guys actually look at the number. I mean, not to be whatever. Maybe this is a bad thing, but like of all the data and all the stuff I look at, like I never actually look at what the number is.
I don't really usually either. I just know the Fed likes it, so it's worth paying attention to kind of get a feeling for what they might do. Like that's their preferred gauge, isn't it? The core PPI.
I think so.
Yeah, I bet more. Like I just follow like. Are they using it as like a sell event or are they using it as a buy event, right? Like
yeah, right.
In the early push up from like kind of like the more lows, every time we had data, they were like offloading inventory into the data and it would be like a big pullback. Yeah. And that hadn't been the case for the last like little bit. And I think this morning we saw that again, right? Where like although, you know, they pushed down and then sold back up, like the day was sort of like the event of today. Was a sell-off event, which I think kind of leads into next week as being a sell-off event. Thursday we lose the daily.
Okay. Well, okay. I'll give you a number. So it's gonna be 2.7.
2.7%. Is that bad? Like, is the higher number bad or lower number bad?
That would be bad.
The higher it is, the worse it is.
Yeah,
I'll go 3.2 then. Since you, so I'm literally guessing. I don't look at the data.
I know. For my bold prediction, then I'm just gonna fade both of you guys. I'm gonna say we post a RIPA after it happens on Thursday, and it comes in lower than expected. Right. So I'll go with
the bear trap scenario.
How about 1.9%?
Wouldn't be unreasonable.
I have no idea what is or not.
Nah.
Might be time to sunset this.
It's gonna be a nothing burger. We just like balance.
I think to Flary's point, none of us actually look at the number. I'm watching the chart. I don't anticipate that PPI or CPI or GDP or any of that is gonna be something that will tell me what to do. Like, oh, we missed by 0.1, so I'm gonna be long or short. I'm just watching and like when we get to something interesting and have a setup, I'm taking it. Usually those news events just create an opportunity.
Yeah, no, I'm usually just, you go back and look to see why, to try to determine why, but really there is no why. The why is people needed to sell. They needed liquidity. They waited for this news event.
I mean, I'm just interested in where can I pull the trigger in accordance with my plan.
I just hope they leave some skipped auctions like they did at the lows today. That was... Oh, good. I was like, dude, if this thing rolls over, we're going to 216. There was like a big old chunk down there right at the low where there's just no price traded. I was like, oh, God, the bots are going to love cleaning this thing up. Let's go.
Okay. All right. I think we made it through this one a little longer than normal, but I think there's a lot of good information split in here, so I'm probably not going to take too much of this out.
It was a marathon.
That's a good episode. So I got to say thanks, Baba. Thank you, Flary, for joining me this evening. Everybody who's listening, for sticking around to the end. If you could, please show our panelists some love. Check out their links in the show notes. Remember, check out that new combined Discord. We can trade with Baba Banks every Friday morning on the free side. Listen in live to these recordings. You can even share your most personal thoughts with the community in our new journaling channels. We will be back soon with another exciting episode, hopefully as impressive as Friday's sell-off. But until then, pat that 5-star rating like a Twitter guru patting his own back and have a great week.
Yeah, boy.
Welcome to Prime Video's Culture-Rated Collection. This is the place where Black is the main character, where we don't jump through hoops just to hear our voice and can fall in love with illuminating documentaries like Giannis, The Marvelous Journey.
I'm just a hard worker that's trying to survive.
Enjoy the animated series, The Second Best Hospital in the Galaxy.
All doctors report immediately!
Where we dive into something new like the latest season of Them, The Scare, and the award-winning American Fiction.
Welcome home, baby!
Or add to the experience by buying or renting the biopic of a legend, Bob Marley, One Love.
I want my music to unify people.
And add on channels like Paramount Plus and Stars to bask in nostalgia with Beverly Hills Cop.
This is the cleanest police car I've ever been in my life.
And BMF.
You're about to take over the whole nation.
Explore Prime Video's culture-rated collection and enjoy old school greats and new school hits. Prime Video, find your happy place. Restrictions apply. See Amazon.com/AmazonPrime for details.
This podcast is intended for informational and educational purposes only, does not constitute financial or investment advice, and should not be construed as such. The hosts, guests, and contributors of this podcast are not licensed financial advisors, brokers, or professionals. Any trading or investment decisions made based on the content of this podcast are solely at the listener's discretion and risk. Trading and investing in financial markets carry inherent risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. Listeners should conduct their own research and seek advice from qualified financial professionals before making any financial decisions. The views, opinions, and information shared in this podcast are those of the individual contributors and do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the podcast creators or associated organizations. Produced by China Shop Productions.